holding on Kuf Samaches on the days about the middle of the Yom, along the Hinchat Torah. Okay. We think that the whole problem of Arabs taking away land that we know is ours, a new thing, as we'll see in our Gemara, it's not. As we'll see in the Gemara, it's not. Hanhu Arvoi, there were these Arabs, also the Pumbedisa, who came to Pumbedisa, to have a Ansi al Osa de Inshi. They were taking away land from people, and along with the, and they were not only taking away the land, they were taking away the shtar that shows that the person owns the land. Rebbeinu Gershom actually explains the situation a little bit differently. He says they weren't just Sam taking it as gazlonim. He says what it was is these Arabs were they were part of the they were part of the army. So when the army in Babel, yeah. So when the army would be in a certain place for a while, the king would give them permission to expropriate land that they should be, as long as they're stationed over there, they'll be able to live off that land. So, meanwhile, the people who owned this land, some of them had not yet had a chazakah on this land for 3 years. So they were concerned about that. They were concerned about that by the time the Arabs are finished living off the land and leave, we may have lost our shtar. It'll be already 3 years since we bought the field. So according to the Ben Gershon, not future. According to the Rashbam, if these Arabs were actually outright stealing the field as well as the shtaris that go with them.
Really?
Yeah. Also, Marasai will come to Abaya. The owners of those fields came to Abaya to add with the problem. Amrule, they said to him, Lechti Mar Shtarin, Rebbe, look at our shtaris. First, see our shtar. You can look at each of our shtaris to make sure that it's valid. V'lichtev l'mar shtar achrin alei. And then, for each one of us, write another shtar for each of us that we own our particular field. That way, if one shtar gets lost, if one shtar ends up getting seized by these Arabs, or gets lost during the time when the Arabs are in control of the field or whatever, we'll have another copy available. However, Abaya said to them, I can't. My Eved Lahu, what do you want me to do for you? The Omer of Safra, because in fact we see, as we're going to continue in the Sugya, that Rav Safra says, Ein kosvin shnei shtaris al soda achas. You're not allowed to write two shtaris on the same field. Two shtaris showing that the person owns the field. So you already have a shtar. It's one thing we talked about in the Mishnah, for example, you have a shtar which is on the verge of getting erased, or it already got erased because it got damaged by water or whatever. That's one thing. But here you have an existing shtar. I can't write you another one. What's the problem? Duma torif v'hadar torif. Because you might conceivably use it illegally to be torif twice. Let's take a scenario as follows. We know we've learned many times before about the concept of buying property by achrayus. We're going to discuss it more in our service today. So achrayus, in other words, that if Reuven sells Shimon a field, and it turns out that the field gets taken away from Shimon to pay for some previous debt of Reuven's or whatever, then Reuven will compensate Shimon for it. Now what happens? It can happen at the time when Shimon is supposed to be compensated. It can happen at the time when Levi, the Baal Chayv of Reuven, comes and takes away the field from Shimon. It can happen that Reuven himself does not have what for Shimon to collect from. In that case, Shimon will be entitled to go, for example, to Yehuda, who bought property from Reuven after him, after he, Shimon, did, and take away from Yehuda. And then Yehuda will be the one who has to go back to Reuven and get reimbursed, etc. It can be a whole chain, but the point is, in other words, so now what can you have if you have two shtaris? You could have conceivably like this. Now we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, we're going to learn on the next Amud, that when a Baal Chayv takes away property like that, his original shtar Chayv is ripped up and instead he's given a shtar, there's a series of shtaris, we'll see over there, there's a series of shtaris, because there's a whole process over there involved in having a Baal Chayv collect from Karka, especially in this case from the Chosim Shabbatim. So fine. So now what will happen is his first shtar mecher, the Shimon's first, if he has two copies of the shtar that he owns this field, what could conceivably happen? One of them, then, for now, Levi will come take away the field from him. He will now go to Yehuda and demand that he gives him some land to compensate because then you will have to go after Reuven. Meanwhile, if Shimon has another copy of the shtar, he can do the same thing all over again with somebody else. And that would be illegal because he's already been compensated once. Therefore, Abaya says, I can't have you have two copies of your shtar. Now, the Rishonim asks, why can't you just write them a new shtar without a chrayus? Just write these guys, and usually these guys who are afraid of their status getting taken away by the Arabs. Fine, write them a new shtar. Pliny bought this property from Pliny, but there's no achrayus, and that should avoid the problem. So the Ritva says it's true they could, but these guys were demanding a shtar with achrayus. Another answer that some of the Mephoshim give is we're going to see later in the Gemara, we're going to have the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, which Abaye may have held like that even without achrayus, you have a problem of double shtaris, for reasons which we'll see later. Anyway, achrayus normally means that, again, that if the field is taken away from Shimon by one of Reuven's creditors, such as Levi, then he will have the ability to go to Reuven or to somebody who Reuven later on sold property to and be reimbursed for it. And get the shtar itself usually contains achrayus in it. You have machloikas, there's a machloikas in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, we're also going to have it later on in our Gemara, whether achrayus tos sofer. If it did not say achrayus explicitly in the shtar, is that considered just a mistake on the part of the sofer? And we say, nevertheless, achrayus is in effect, or maybe not. You bought the field with achrayus, right?
And I have a shtar.
You have a shtar that you bought it, right? And it says achrayus. What it means
is... Unix
that's what if we say achrayus tos sofer, it means that yes, there's a presumption. Unless the shtar explicitly says there's no achrayus, then it means there's achrayus. If we say achrayus lav tos sofer, then it's the other way around. It has to explicitly say achrayus. So achrayus would work. You have this field now, which you bought. If you bought it from me, let's say. If now my baal chayv comes and takes away the field from you because I owed him money and defaulted on a loan, you will be entitled to come back to me and say, I'm entitled to other land or to reimbursement or whatever because I bought a field from you. You bought a field from me, Bacharias, and therefore you're entitled that you're going to be reimbursed in a case like that.
Could you keep the land and mortgage it?
What? Could you keep the land and
mortgage it to pay off your debt? And then
the normal situation would be that the original seller pays off his balsoid with money or what have you, and then there's no issue in the first place. The issue only comes if the one who owes the money defaults on it, and the balsoid winds up having to go through the whole process, which we'll see later, to collect the money. And then you go after me to get reimbursed for it.
But
right.
If I have two stars, I can go after you for the money twice.
Not you can go after me, but you could go after me, and then you could go after him, let's say. He, who also later on bought Tarka from me. No, not you can go after me twice. You can go after, let's say, him and him, where I sold Tarka to him later on. I sold Kauka to him later on after I borrowed the money from him and after I sold the Kauka to you. And later on, I sold yet other Kauka to him. So you would have the ability first to go to him. And later on, if you had another shtar, conceivably, you could go to him. Yeah.
So then he could go to someone else, too, because he bought it from you.
Who could? No. Yeah. Right. Ultimately, you're going to have the two of them are still going to come back to me. Right. Okay. We'll see later in the Gemara. Right. Eventually, the whole thing will be found out. However, there's still a problem of what happened. Meanwhile, there's still going to be pay risk eaten, which is hard to get back. So yeah. Okay. So we want to avoid that situation. We'll see. We'll get into the details soon. But let's finish the story here. Okay. Habakkuk Tau Delay. So these guys are bugging Abaye. They're demanding that he do this, that he override the statement of Rav Safra's and whatever, and write the second shtar for them. Amalei v'Safrei. So finally, Abaye tells the sofer to get rid of them. He tells Zivk Sovlahu, who on a machas ve'edav al aniyar, go write for them a shtar where the body of the shtar will be on erased paper and the edim will be on the clean part of the paper. The puzzle, such a shtar, as we learned earlier in the parak, is puzzle. So therefore, in other words, basically, what he's saying is the straightforward meaning of it is he's trying to get them off his back. He'll give them a shtar, which they're not going to realize is puzzle, but actually will be puzzle. So this way they won't bug him. They'll think they have a valid shtar, but it'll turn out it's not a valid shtar. Rabbeinu Gershom has a different shita on it. He understands that he's not telling them that it's going to be a shtar that's completely invalid. It's true it'll be invalid as far as the thing of achrayus. It'll still be proof that they own the land, such that, for example, the original person who sold it won't be able to say, this is my land, and you never bought it from me in the first place. So even if it was al-Machat, the age of al-Aniyar, he's learning that, it'll be good enough for it to have some power. So therefore, it's not like the Rashbam would learn that he's doing it stam to get them off his back and giving them something which they think is kosher and really is not. It has a certain validity. Just it won't. This way we'll avoid the problem. However... Omalei Rav Acha Bamanyumi La'abaya, the Dumei Rishumei Niker, but Rav Acha Bamanyumi says to Abaya, if you write an original shtar and then you erase it and then rewrite something else, what's going to happen? The original writing might still be visible under the new writing. You might still be able to tell. It might not have been fully 100% erased. There might be enough left of the ink to be able to tell what was written there before. V'tanya, and we learned in a braise, which we learned yesterday, nimchacha nitashtesh, if you have a shtar that was erased or smudged, imrishumei niker, if you're still able to make out what the original letters were, kosher. Then such a shtar is kosher. So aren't you a buyer worried? What's going to happen? The pashtus you're saying, when you say, write for them a shtar where the body of the shtar is going to be on erased paper, the pashtus, how are you going to do it? You're going to write the full shtar, the full thing that Pliny bought this field from Pliny on such and such a date, et cetera, et cetera. Then you're going to erase it. Then you're going to rewrite the same thing. The problem is, what if you can see the first letters that were there? And then you'll say that it's a kosher shtar on that basis because you can still make out what was there originally. And then we'll say you have that was originally on clean paper. The edim is also on the clean part of the paper, and therefore you're good. Yeah.
You're going to see that the suspects were the same as the second.
No, you're not. Inevitably, when you're writing handwriting, you're not going to be able to literally get the second letters exactly over the first letters. Inevitably, you're going to have those places where it's not going to be quite the same, and therefore you might be able to make it out. Amaleh, Abaya answers, and we come in a shtar amalia. You think I mean to write out a full-fledged shtar and then erase it? No, aleph beis ba'almakam. All I mean is just write aleph beis. The Rashban understands it means write random letters. You write random letters on the whole thing, then you erase it, then you write the actual shtar on top of that. The advantage being, again, that now you have the shtar is ala machak, it's on the erased area, and the edim are on the yar, and therefore it's a possible shtar. But there's no problem that you're going to read what was Rishumei Nikar. There's no problem that you're going to be able to make out what was written there originally, because if you do, there's not a shtar, it's just random letters of the alphabet. Again, Rabbeinu Gershom understands it differently. He says that what Abaya meant by writing Aleph Beis Ba'alma means, for example, write like half of each word. Now, again, Rabbeinu Gershom is going according to his shita. It means it won't be a completely possible shtar, because according to him, Abaya is not trying to fob them off with a possible shtar when they're asking for a kosher one. All it is once this shtar has two things wrong with it. One, that it's number one, that it's written on erased paper and the edim on fresh paper, and number two, that the words aren't even written out in full. Then already there'll be if you try to use such a shtar to be torah from other people, to be torah from later lakochos or whatever, people will be suspicious and they'll start checking into it and they'll soon find out what the truth is. So that way you'll have what you want. After all, you'll have a shtar that'll protect you so that when the Arabs leave your fields or whatever, you'll still have another shtar. But that shtar won't be able to be used for tricking, for cheating anybody else.
Yeah.
Because it has a rating.
But what if you make out the letters under the line?
That's the point. Rabbeinu Gershom is saying, because b'chatchila, even if you make it out, you're going to see that all that was written there was like half of each word. So that itself, that together with the fact that the shtar as a whole was erased, is going to make you suspicious. If now, for example, to continue our analogy from before, he's going to now come, let's say, to him and say, you need to give me some of your land because I got my field that I bought for that I bought from me taken from Bachrai, was taken away by him. He's going to start looking at the shtar. Wait a minute, the shtar, it was erased and rewritten, and even if I can make out the words, I can see there was only a half of each word over there. Something suspicious over here. And he'll start making inquiries and soon enough find out that this is just a replacement shtar. Turn it up on him. So now we're going to get into the meat of this din. We learn in a braisa. If somebody comes to Beis Din and says, a malva comes to Beis Din and says, my shtar chov got lost, even if edim say that we ourselves wrote the shtar and signed it and gave it to him, So therefore, in other words, there's no possibility maybe that it was only written in order to borrow. We are talking about a malva, but you could still have on the face of it, if you didn't have those edim coming, you could argue maybe it was written intending to borrow and you didn't actually borrow yet. Once the edim say, we wrote it and signed it and gave it to him, that takes care of that possibility. Nevertheless, in Kosvin, lo yitzeh shtar, nevertheless, they're not allowed to write him another copy of the shtar, as we were discussing before, and as we're going to discuss in the continuation of the sugya. The medvarim amurim b'shtarei halva. Actually, it's not. It's a little bit different than what we were saying before. With a halva, there's an obvious reason, because if the first shtar is not really lost, then first of all, you could end up using the second shtar to collect again. Second of all, you can end up using both shtaros to collect from the shabbatim. Yeah, you have a lot of real problems. The Maharsha, by the way, points out that there can be a difference. If a person, let's say, if they have Edim, let's say that he lost the shtar, let's say that he lost it in the street or something, that might be different because the chance of him himself finding the original shtar is very low. So therefore, maybe we don't have to be concerned about that. We're talking about if, let's say, he's saying, I lost it, as in I misplaced it someplace in my house and I can't find it. You can't write him a second shtar because eventually he's going to find the original one, and then he's going to have two shtaris with all the problems of that entails.
Case with the gangster, the whole thing, I thought the best pizza would have been to take the second copy and leave it like that. This way, no one's finding it, but the copy just in case something would happen.
But I don't know that you can expect Beis Din to be the repository of everybody's documents. People are supposed to, yeah.
No, because those gangsters were jumping on people in that area.
But you never know. The Arabs might come to the Beis Din itself and take all the documents as well.
They're going to go and get
it. Okay. Anyway. Right. Continues the Braisa. When is this talking about that you can't write a second copy of the shtar if it's a shtar halvar, for the reason that we just said? But if it's a shtar of buying and selling, a shtar, in other words, that Pliny bought a field from Pliny, that you can write another copy of it. You just don't write the achrayis. Because again, that'll avoid the problem that we were discussing. Now you can't use the second shtar to say that now you can't use the second copy of the shtar to be torah from other lekuchos because you don't have any achrayis in it anyway. So therefore, by definition, it has you have no recourse with it. On the other hand, by the way, Tosfos has a long discussion over here about all the ins and outs of this, including the question: ultimately, what do you write in the second shtar? Do you write the original date? Do you write the date of the original shtar, or do you write the date when you're writing the replacement shtar now? Because that makes a difference. It makes a difference as far as the shibud on it. I mean, even if you're writing without a chayiv, the thing itself can be meshubud to previous loans that the mocher took out. So it's going to make a difference if you date it the same as the original one, then fine. If you date it later, then you're messing around with the shibud. Okay. Anyway, Reb Shimon Gamliel, ma'ach shtar mekach memka in kais. And on the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, even a shtar mekach memka, even a shtar of a sale or a field, you also can't write a second copy for reasons which we're going to discuss too. And so also Rav Shimon ben Gamliel used to say, in a similar vein, if somebody gives a matana to somebody else, the hechzu lo yis ashtar, and then the person who received the matana returned the shtar to the giver, then the matana is also returned. He holds, as we're going to see in the course of the discussion, that. Well, he holds of a concept that we're going to discuss called oisius niknis b'mesira. That the letters, meaning the content of a shtar, can be nikneh just by handing it over to a person. According to him, you don't need a separate kinyan to be makneh a shtar to somebody else. So therefore, if Reuven gives Shimon a present and gives him a shtar matana with it, or for that matter, as we'll see later on in the Gemara, if Reuven sells the field to Shimon and a shtar matana and a shtar mecher is written, if Shimon were to then return just the shtar itself to Reuven, then that would cancel the matana or it would undo the sale. The Chachamim disagree with that, but therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, on that basis, as we'll see, that you're not able to write a second copy of a shtar mekach memker, because again, all you have to do is return the shtar, and then you can, and then already you're opening up the possibility of knunya, of playing tricks over here, as we shall see, a conspiracy. Whereas the Chachamim say that in such a case, the Matana is still valid unless you actually resold it to him, gave it to him with a proper kinyan, or a new shtar, or what have you. Okay. So the question is, so we said, according to the Tanakama of the Braisa, that when it comes to Shtore Mekach HaMemker, you can write a new copy, you just have to leave out the Achrayus. My timer, why is that? So that's exactly what Abaye was quoting before, that Rav Safra says, because you can't write two shtaris on one field. Because again, like we said before, you could conceivably use it twice to be torah from two different people. And actually now the point is also it requires the consent of the Balchoyev. It requires the Balchoyev to play along with this as well. But fine, the Balchoyev can be in on the conspiracy as well. You'll make a deal with him that after you're told it from these two different people, then you and him will split up there. Will split up the ill-gotten gain. Yeah. And the Gemara spells it out. Duma also Balchoyev Torah play lahai. What can happen is the Balchoyev will take away from the first buyer. The original buyer, Shimon, will take out one Steinbecher, the Torah Lekuchas. He will take away from other Lekuchas. By the way, that Ramban points out over here, you could ask, who says? I mean, when Shimon, if we're saying over here that Shimon is going to go after, is ultimately able to go after Reuven to satisfy the Achdayus, well, if he goes to Reuven first, then the whole thing is going to blow up in his face. So the whole thing is not going to work. It only works if he's going to Yehuda and then to Yisachar and whatever. Who says he has the ability to go to them first, ahead of Reuven? The Ramban says, in principle, he does have to go to Reuven first. However, what if Reuven is not in town, for example? What if we learned before, I think we're going to learn in Sanhedrin again, that Zman Beistin usually is 30 days. Usually 30 days is the amount of time Beistin leaves for something to be accomplished. Let's say the guy is out of town. He's not going to return within the next 30 days. Then Shimon Taka has the ability to immediately go after Yehuda or Yisachar or what have you and not have to wait until longer than 30 days till Reuven shows up. So there you have a possibility where you could end up making this Knunya work. So Shimon will go and take out the one star, the Torah Lekuchas, and he'll go and take away from Yehuda to satisfy the Achrayus so that he's reimbursed for what he originally bought. But Amalei the Balchoyev, then Shimon says to the Balchoyev, Shufli, the Rashma Machzoid, Shuf is related to the word Beshufi, which means calmly, peacefully, at rest. What? Vayelach Shefi from Machzoid Parashah? Not so much, no. They're Shefi meant, well, sort of, in a way. I mean, Shefi over there, Rashi explained, meant alone. I think Rashi did say that Shufi was related to the word, like Sheket, like quiet. Yeah, that's basically the word Shufi means quiet, calm, peaceful, whatever, yeah. Anyway. The point is, now Shimon says to the Balchoyev Levi, Shufli, let things be calm for me. In other words, don't come and be ma'arer on me. Wait, the ikumba, let me have a chance to live in this property and take care of it for a few years, let's say 4 or 5 years, until everybody has forgotten the circumstances under which I took away this property from Yehuda. Then you come again and say, wait a minute, I want to be told to take away property because Reuven never paid off his debt, and you, Shimon, are the one who bought from him, and I'm going to take it away from you. Then Shimon will take out his next shtar mecher on the field and say, well, wait a minute, this field was taken away by Levi, the Balchoyev. Therefore, now I'm going to go after Yisachar. And then he'll go and take away from other lekuchas from Yisachar. So to avoid that problem, we cannot have a second shtar that has achrayus in it. The question is, the Gemara asks, how can you make such a thing work? The kiven to karayne the shtar of the malva, once we rip up the malva's shtar, as we're going to see soon, that part of the process of a malva taking away property, taking away especially nechasim mishabodim, some of the Rishonim also say nechasim benichurin or whatever, is that we rip up the shtar so he can't collect with it again.
That basically does that.
The my hodah torif lay. Then on what basis is he going to go and be torif again? On what basis is Levi going to be able to come 4 or 5 years later and say to Shimon, hey, wait a minute, you need to give me that property because Reuven owes me money? Already the first time that he was told from Shimon, which is what triggered this whole thing over here, then already his shtar chayv is gone. So you might answer, okay, maybe Taka, we didn't rip it up. Doesn't work. Va'amar Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman says, now, you have a whole, there's a whole seder to a balchayv collecting a debt. The Rashbam describes the order like this. A couple of other Rishonim have slightly different orders of how it goes. In particular, we'll talk in a second, the Rambam holds a little bit differently, and according to him, that's passed in the Shulchan Aruch. But the Rashbam describes it like this. The Malva comes to Beis Din and complains and says and demands that the loiva pay him back. So we summon the loiva to Beis Din. If the loiva doesn't show up, then we put him in cheder. We live down in the, near the end of Bavakam. Then what we do is, the next thing we do is we write a shtar tirpa. A shtar tirpa is a shtar that says the Malva has the right to go look and find karka of the loiva, either that belongs to the loiva himself, which is the chasam b'nei chorin, or property which he sold after the time of his original shtar chayv, which is called the chasam shabbatim. Your shtar tirpa entitles you to go look for any such property and see which one is suitable to collect for your chayv. As the Gemara is going to say over here, before they write the shtar tirpa, they have to rip up the shtar chayv. Otherwise, you can do it again and again. So he comes to Beis Din again. He wants to have his things. He wants to have his chayv collected. The other guy's not coming, or he doesn't pay, or whatever. So we put the other guy in chayv. We rip up the shtar chayv. We give him a shtar tirpa, which entitles him to go start looking for property. He finds something eventually. He finds the chasam b'nei chorin and the chasam b'shabbatim. Yeah, no, the star tirpa makes it. Because it means because who says maybe it was already paid off, maybe it was already maybe it isn't. Once he finds something, then he comes back to Beis Din. They rip up the star tirpa and they write him a new star called the star adrachta. The star adrachta is what makes it. You now have the right to take this particular nechasim that you identified as being valid, as being appropriate to collect. Then we have this one. Then the next thing we have to do is Beis Din has to go and actually evaluate it and make sure that it's worth the amount that he claims it is. So then they rip up the shtar adrachta and write him a shtar shuma which says that we evaluated this property as being worth X amount and you're getting it in payment of your chayv. So you have this whole process over there.
Long process.
It's a long process, yeah. And at each stage in the process, the previous shtar has to be ripped up, so he can't use it again. So va'amar Rav Nachman, so kol tirpa d'le kosev karein al shtar of the milva, any shtar tirpa, again, which is the one that tells the malva, you have the right to go start looking for the chasim to have your debt paid off from, any such shtar that does not say we ripped up the shtar of the milva, lav tirpa, who is not a valid shtar tirpa. So it means that it opens the possibility that he could do that again and again. Any shtar adrachta, which is the next stage that you're entitled to take possession of this property once we base and evaluate it. If it doesn't, shtar tirpa is before, you have the, according to the gusa that we have here, which is also how the Rashbam understands it, the order is tirpa, adrachta, and shumra. The Rambam actually understands it the other way around. The Rambam understands that on the contrary, the adrachta is what gives the malva the right to start looking around first for property, and he understood because according to that explanation, by the way, the word adrachta comes according to the way that the Rashbam says that the word adrachta comes from the word dorach, because you have the right now to walk into that property and take possession of it. According to the Rambam's understanding, rather, that it means you have the ability to now start going and looking for what to collect from, then it comes from a word that we find in Sefer Shoftim, menucha hidrichuhu, which means to chase. You have the ability now to go and chase after the loiva or the various people who he sold to and see what you can find. And then later on, according to the Rambam, next comes the shtar tirpa, which says we're actually going to be toref, we're going to take away that property from this other guy who he sold it to and give it to you. So the Rambam would have the gifts the other way around over here. He would say that the adrachta has to say we ripped up the shtar milva and the tirpa has to say we ripped up the shtar adrachta. Okay, anyway. Any adrachta that does not say we ripped up the shtar tirpa, which is the previous stage, lav adrachta, who is not a valid adrachta, and and any shtar shuma, which is, again, we're based in write down, we evaluated the property to be worth X amount. If it doesn't say in that shtar that we ripped up the adrachta, which came before it, the one that gave him the ability to take over this property, lav shuma, who is not a valid shuma. So back to our question then, in other words, given that you never have more than one shtar existing in this whole process at one time, and it has to be that way, then how do you have any possibility that Levi is going to go, again, what were we discussing before, the possible knunya? Levi is going to bring his shtar chayv and take away property from Shimon in payment for the debt that Reuven owed him. Later on, a few years later, after Shimon himself has taken property from Yehuda, to satisfy his achrayus, A few years later, Levi is going to come with his shtar chayiv again and take away that property from Shimon, and therefore Shimon will end up taking away from Yisachar. How is that possible? We said the shtar nova has long since been ripped up.
Every stage where
it's yes, exactly. The answer is, yes, but we still need that you still have the possibility of Knunya. If he's not coming, what if Levi is not coming on the basis of a claim that I at some point lent Reuven money? What if he's coming on the basis of a claim? That's fine. Don't. If you're talking about that, I need a drink. That's fine. I'm okay. Fine. Levi is not coming on the basis I lent money to Reuven and he never paid me back. It's true. Then ultimately his shtar nova is going to be ripped up. But what if Levi is coming with a claim and saying this field that you bought from Reuven, which Reuven claimed to be his, he actually stole it from my father, and he brings Adam, let's say, that Ataka belonged to his father. So now you have the same problem. In other words, if you have two starters over here, then you have the same problem. Levi, the Nigzel son, is going to come take away the property from Shimon. Shimon will go take property from Yehuda to get reimbursed from that. Later on, Levi is going to come bring Adim that the field was stolen, and he's going to be towed up again, and again Shimon is going to take out a second shtar, and then go be towed up from the next guy. So that's the problem. To avoid that problem is why we can't have two shtars.
Even the second one doesn't have a chayis.
Well, according to the Chachamim, we said if the second one doesn't have a chayis, we're fine. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, not for reasons that we'll talk about soon, because Otis Nikmas and Mesira. Here we're dealing according to the Chachamim. So that's the problem, because then there's no shtar involved over here. Levi doesn't have to bring shtar that this property ever belonged to his ancestors. All he has to do is bring Adim to that effect, and then he can find Adim. So that's why we're saying that's why you can't have two starters. That's the bottom line. That's why you can't have two starters. Amalei Rav Acha Midifti the Ravina, the Lomalei the Memalei the Bal Chayv Shufli Bahai Ara the Eikumba. So Rav Acha Midifti asks Ravina, let's analyze that scenario that we just said about how this Knunia is going to be made to work. Why would Shimon the Lekeach have to go through that whole rigmarole of telling Levi that you cooperate with me, you wait a few years before you come and press your claim again, and then you'll come and take it away from me, and then et cetera. Why do we need all that? Typically, all we need is you have a much simpler way of making the thing happen. Given the nugget today's story, since he has two stories, tariff. Then he's going to be able to be towed up again. So never mind. The Baal Chayiv has waited several years. In other words, he has two shtaris that are dated the same day. So if Levi takes away the property from him the first time, he's going to go show one shtar to Yehuda and take away property from Yehuda. Then he's going to take out the other shtar and show it to Yisachar and take away property from Yisachar. And there you have the Knunia right there without needing anybody else to cooperate.
Not done in Bezen?
What?
Not done in Bezen?
He can go to two different buttons, didn't he?
He would have had his two shtars.
He has his two shtars. Again, the shtar is going to be whipped up as part of the process. Fine, but he has a second shtar. He's easily able to go to another base. That's what we're saying. We're talking about, we're discussing the fact that you can't have two shtars.
No,
and we're saying because you have that whole complicated Knunia. But why do you need such a complicated Knunia? You would be able to do the Knunia much more simply. He could go to, on the basis of one shtar, he goes to Yehuda and takes away property from him to satisfy his achrayus. Then he takes out his other shtar, goes to Yisachar, and doesn't
get the other shtar.
That if he had two shtars, you're saying he can't have two. Well, that's why we're saying he can't have two shtars because of Knunia. But we're asking, why do you need a Knunia? Why do we need to assume that the Knunia needs to involve the cooperation of the Baal Chayiv of Levi, and that it's going to take a few years between one and the next for one part of it to be forgotten? Wouldn't he have the possibility of doing it with Yehuda and Yisachar one after the other?
The fact is, we learned some of that that I. Something that has a coil.
Yeah.
Okay, the original Chava, not necessarily does the fact that they were Torah. Maybe
go take the last one else.
Yeah, I don't know, not necessarily. Okay. So anyway, the answer is in Ken Fishia Le Balajin. Yes, but he wouldn't do that because then if he does that, if he goes after Yehuda, and then right after that he goes after Yisachar, then there's going to be a lot of argument involved, and people are going to notice that something's fishy over here, and the thing will be found out. As opposed to when it's years apart, by the time he comes after Yisachar, it will have long since been forgotten that he ever took it away from Yehuda.
Who has to wait on the field?
We said that Levi, the Baal Chayiv, would have to wait on Shimon, let Shimon occupy the field for a few years before he comes and takes it away. That way there'll be enough time that people will have forgotten that Shimon was already reimbursed by Yehuda, and now when he goes after Yisachar,
Shimon bought
from Reuben.
Who's the lender? Who's the borrower?
The borrower is Reuben. The lender is Levi.
Levi and Shimon make a knunya,
exactly. So Shimon can't do it by himself because then Yehuda and Yisachar will very easily figure out that.
I'm going to take this land from you, Shimon. But then we're going to go after Yisachar later.
Eventually, yes. Yeah.
In 5 years.
Yeah.
So Shimon losing his field just so that he'll get part.
So he'll get Yehuda. He'll get some part of Yehuda and some part of Yisachar. Yeah.
And he can pay more money.
Yeah.
He can pay more money from his own field.
No. Because the buyer of the field is getting the field
appropriated
is Shimon, right?
I see. Pay Shimon some money also on the table. I'm using the field for 5 years. He has rent for 5 years. And then I will go off to two other guys.
It's a canoe, yeah. I mean, it's complicated, but yeah. Okay. The question is, how about another possibility? We can avoid the whole problem of Knunya and still be able to have a second shtar. The list of Lahai Shtar Malya, why don't we just write a perfectly good shtar, write a perfectly good shtar with Achrayus, because maybe Taki has a point. After all, I mean, the whole point was the Braisa was a situation where he's claiming that my shtar code was lost, and maybe Taki did lose it. We shouldn't take away his Achrayus unnecessarily. However,
the lender paid him back. The whole thing is false.
So write a perfectly good shtar that has a chrayus and everything, the lichtiv tavra, lemocher, and how do we avoid the problem of knunia that we just talked about? What we'll do is we'll write a shover to the mocher, to the seller, that says, kol shtarit yipkon al arada, all shtarit that come out regarding this field, psulin, are posel, levarmin de yipuk is in the da, except for anyone that is dated on such a date. Now, up until now, we were talking about, as Tosfos said, that when you have write a replacement shtar, you're writing the original date of the original shtar. You're not writing a new date over here. But over here, what we do is what the Gemara is suggesting over here is instead of doing that, write the new shtar as of the new date, as of the current date, not the original date. Give the guy a shover that says any previous shtaris on this field are invalid. Amrur Rabbanan Kameh de Rapapa, so that Rabbanan told over this discussion to Rapapa, the Amrila Kameh de Ravashi, or some say in front of Ravashi, they pointed out this question, and they said, obviously the answer must be Zay Semeris, Ein Kosvin Shover. Therefore, we must be able to prove from this answer that in fact, the din is you don't write a shover. We're going to have in the next couple of days, as the Shem, we're going to have a discussion. It starts out with a machlok in the Mishnah, and then it continues in the Gemara about when a loan is paid off or partially paid off or whatever. Do you write a shover or do you find some other way of doing it? Because the problem of writing a shover is then you have to hold on to that shover indefinitely. The Malva may still have the Shtar Chayv in his possession, and you're going to have to hold on to the Shover indefinitely.
If anything, keep a copy of the Shover.
Again, we don't necessarily expect that Beis Din is going to be the repository of everybody's documents. But obviously, we must answer over here, you don't write a Shover. And you can't obligate. You can't obligate in this case. You can't say because the lekeach losses his shtar, therefore you're going to require the moicher to hold on to. You're not going to require the moicher to hold on to a shover. Evidently, you don't. And since you don't have a shover, then you have the problem of the double shtar. On the lahu, sort of papa, Rav Ashi answers them, not necessarily, but alma kosman shover. You could argue that in general, such as in the cases that we'll deal with in the next mishnah and the gemara on it, in general maybe you do write a shover. But the reason why over here you can't do that is because of a different problem. Because what's going to happen? So again, Levi the Baal Chov is going to come and take from the Lekeach, from Shimon. Shimon now, we're saying, is going to go to Yehuda or Yisachar or whoever and collect from them to satisfy the Achrayus. Now the lakuchas don't have a copy of the shover. They're not going to know that there exists a shover over here. They're fine. The Moshe Rubin will have the shover, but not necessarily are they going to see it. So therefore you're back to the problem of Pnuni again. Okay, the problem is Lav Amri de Adra Hadri. And so the question is, okay, but after all, those Lekuchas also bought Vachrayas. Aren't they going to eventually go back to Reuben and collect for the land of theirs that was taken away? So then at that point they'll finally see that there's a shover, and then they'll know that they've been had. And then they'll go and be able to get back from Shimon or Levi, whatever. The answer is true, but Abahachi Bahachi Shomit will also pay. Yes, but the problem is, meanwhile, all this time Shimon or Levi have been taking payers from the field, and to be able to get reimbursed for something that's already been eaten or something that's already been spent is much harder. Fine, the character itself they'll be able to get back once they realize once the whole thing is exposed on the basis of the shover, but. Yes. To be able to collect that payrus is going to be much harder. We don't want to put them in that situation, and therefore we don't want to have two shtars. Tosfos, by the way, points out that when it comes to a shtar halva, the Gemara doesn't even entertain the possibility of writing such a shover of saying write a shover that invalidates any previous shtar chayv, and therefore that avoids the problem of a double shtar chayv. We don't want to do that because with a shtar chayv, it's very easy to have happened that Reuben borrowed from Levi twice. And if you're going to write a shover saying if you need a copy of the second shtar, you're going to write a shover invalidating all previous ones, it means there goes the original loan. There's going to be no delos b'fnei loven. Nobody's going to want to lend money anymore because there's going to be what's going to happen if the guy loses his shtar, and then you're going to require me to write a second shtar and have the shoiver made up, etc. As opposed to when it comes to mecha chomemter, okay, the Gemara is entertaining the possibility that you could write such a shoiver, We shouldn't make the guy lose his achrayus because of the off chance over here of a knunia. So ultimately we say we can't do it because of the payers. But if it weren't for that issue, yes, we could have in principle done it that way by writing a shover.
But in the case of Alva,
you can't write a shover because there could conceivably be two shtori choy from the same malva to the same loiva, and you don't want to invalidate all the previous ones. No. So the question is, but rather a continuation of the answer, inami, or another possibility why you can't do this. Who says that Yehuda and Yisachar ever bought from Reuven Bachrayus? Maybe they themselves bought Shaloi Bachrayus, in which case they're never going to be going back to Reuven anyway to get reimbursed, because they're not going to be reimbursed. Therefore, they're never going to even discover the existence of the Shaloi. So that's another reason why we can't say write a new shtar with Achrayus and just write a shover to go along with it. Number one, because by the time you discover the shover, the payrus have already been eaten. And number two, because they may not even ever discover the shover if they didn't buy Bachrayus.
But he said in Baba
Haris, there's no question.
You still can't take it away from them illegally. You still can't have Shimon take it away from Yehuda and then years later come and take away from Yisachar in payment of the same thing when it's really just a knunia between him and Levi.
But then the shtar will say that there's no acharyus.
The shtar for Yehuda will say he bought Shalai Bachrayis. The shtar for Yisachar will say that it was bought Shalai Bachrayis. Shimon bought Bachrayis. That's the whole thing. If Shimon bought Shalai Bachrayis, we'd have nothing to talk about it here.
But for Shimon, there was a shtar that was saying acharyus?
Yeah, his original shtar said acharyus. He's claiming that his shtar is lost, and therefore he wants another copy of the shtar. But if you write him a new shtar with acharyus, right, even if you have a shover invalidating any previous shtaris, number one, Yehuda or Yisachar may only find about it after the fact. Or number two, they may never find out about it because what if they bought Shalai Bachrayis? So because of all that, it doesn't work. It really isn't. The question is, Yehochi Shtore Halvonami. In that case, then wouldn't you apply the same logic over here when it comes to a shtar halva? Why would we say you can write a shover when it comes to a shtar halva? Don't you have the same problem? In other words, that you could have the malveh is going to take away from other lakuchas and the lakuchas don't have the shover because the loiver holds on to the shover. So again, you have the same problem. They may not discover the shover until later or whatever. And meanwhile, the malveh is taking away from them. It's taking away from them again and again. The answer is Zuzi Masik, yes, but the difference is over there, when it comes to Halva, since the Malva is owed, the Malva is not owed Karka after all. Fundamentally, what he's owed is money, because that's what he lent, because that's what he lent the other guy. Therefore, Amri, so they will figure Paisei Bal Choy V'Zuzi. They're not gonna be so fast to let the Malva collect their property. They're gonna first go check with the Loiva if maybe he already paid him off. So therefore, there's less of a chance that the Malva is gonna first have a chance already to get the Kauka, to get. They're saying, in other words, no, well, we'll do it. No, but Kauka, in other words, given that Kauka, when it comes to the case of Mecha Chomemter, when it comes to the case of Acharias, since it's expected he's going to be reimbursed in Kauka, it's a natural thing that, okay, you're coming and saying that you're entitled to take away from me because of your Acharias. Okay, then I have to agree, you're entitled to my Kauka. You don't just want money for Acharias, you want Kauka. As opposed to a Halva, if the Malva comes with a shtar saying, I'm entitled to take away this property from you, they're going to start asking questions. They're going to first go to Reuven, the Loiva, and find out, did you ever end up paying off Levi? If you didn't, then okay, then we have to give it to Levi.
That's the content they want.
Because they'll figure that he's coming for Karka. Hocha, the Aramasik, whereas over here, in the case of the Knunia that we were talking about, since Shimon is owed Karka, he's not owed money, Meida Yadi, demand a Masik Arab, Zuzi Le Mephias. People know that somebody like Shimon, who's entitled to get Kauka, is not going to be satisfied with money. You bought Kauka, you want Kauka. You want to be able to make a living off it. So therefore, they have no reason to suspect that maybe already Shimon has been paid off with money or whatever. Because why would he? As the pastor, he gets paid off in land. Therefore, they're not going to think to check. What were the circumstances over here, and was there already a previous time that Shimon was toteth on this or whatever? So eventually, again, they may find out. They'll come back to Reuven to demand their achrayas, assuming they bought the achrayas, and see the shtar. By that time, the payments are gone.
So you're saying someone who bought the karka is not going to accept money, basically.
Right. Because Shimon, who originally bought Kauka, when he wants his achrayas paid off, he's not going to accept money from Reuven or from anybody else. He's going to want Kauka. Okay. All right. Okay. Omar. Now we said in the Braisa. So we've established then why it is that we can't write a new shtar with achrayas because there's no way of avoiding the problem of Knunia. So we said you have to write a new shtar without achrayas, according to the Chachamim. That is, again, Shimon and Amiel disagreed, as we'll talk about in a minute. The Rashbam actually paskins like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Most of the other Rishonim paskin like a Chacham. So the question is, Omar Chutz Min Achrayus Shaboy. We said that you have to write a new shtar that does not have Achrayus in it. Heichi Kasevin. And how do we write it to show that he's not entitled to Achrayus? And after all, you do have the possibility that he still does have his original shtar. Remember, if he's claiming that his shtar is lost, it isn't necessarily. Uh-huh. So what do we write? Rav Nachman says what they have to do is they have to write like this. shtar d'nan, this shtar is meant. The purpose of the shtar is not for the lekeach shimon to be able to collect from mishabodim or from bnei charin. The only reason we're writing the second shtar is to confirm Shimon's ownership of the karka. So if we do that, then we're then
that
we
shows
reward. That shows no, that's how you write, right. And again, in the example that we had at the beginning of the sugya, where Abaya was being harassed by those landowners over there, he could have written them such a shtar, but like the Ritva said, they didn't want such a shtar.
Right.
At least according to the Chacham, he could have written them such a shtar. Again, according to the Shimon Gamliel, not even that. But yeah. So Rafram said, you see from this statement that we said that you have to write explicitly that there's no achrayus. You see from that achrayus tos sofer, that if you just left the word achrayus out of the shtar altogether, we would assume it's just a tos sofer and achrayus would still be in effect.
And therefore it has to be.
Therefore you have to explicitly say that there's no achrayus. Yeah. Because time to cost of like, because we're saying only because he explicitly wrote like that are we saying there's no achrayus. Holy cost of like Gavi. Apparently, if you didn't write that, he'd still be able to be Gavi from the chasim mishabodim from the chasim mishabodim. So no, there is a presumption of achrayus. Rashi is saying. Rabashi Omar
saying that if it's not written,
it's as if it was written. That's in other words, it's pretty accurate. Rabashi Omar. Rabashi says no. Achrayus lav tos sofer. Who knows? You don't have to say that we can prove that from that statement. You could say achrayus is not tos sofer. You could say you do have to explicitly write achrayus, otherwise it's not in effect. Well, my chutzma achrayus shaboy. So you could answer differently than what Rav Nachman did. Rav Nachman was saying that you have to explicitly write that nusach. We don't have to agree with Rav Nachman. We're Amoraim. We're able to disagree with him. Fine. According to and the Braisa itself didn't specify one way or the other. The Braisa just said you write it without the achrayus. So fine. According to Rav Nachman, because achrayus tos sofer, he would have to write such a nusach. If you say achrayus lav tos sofer, all you have to write is the loyksid be'achrayus. You just don't write achrayus in the shtar, and that's that.
And therefore,
you can't prove from that whether achrayus tos sofer. It is the halacha is in fact achrayus tos sofer. The halacha is like Rav Nachman. Therefore, that you do have to write that extra word in. But if we said achrayus lav tos sofer, you would not need to. You would just be able to not put an achrayus in the shtar, and you would be good.
Because of the presumption.
Because then achrayus is only there if it's actually there. The Gemara tells a case, speaking of buying property by Achrayus, there was a woman who gave money to a certain man, Lemizban Lo'ara, to go buy her piece of land. He went and bought the land, Shalai Bachrayus. After Lakhamed Rav Nachman, so she came to Rav Nachman, what am I supposed to do about that? I don't want Shalai Bachrayus, it gets taken away from me by a loiva of the seller, I have no recourse. So Rav Nachman says, you have a point. You're able to say to your shliach, I sent you to do the right thing for me, not to do the wrong thing. A shliach, yeah, we had this expression before, yeah. So a shliach who does the wrong thing, yeah, his shlichus is not a shlichus. Zil zavna minei shloi b'achrayus. What you shliach have to therefore do is go buy that property from the moicher shloi b'achrayus, and have a, the Rashbam says, have a shtar written in your name. V'hadu zavna ni'alo b'achrayus. Then you sell it to her b'achrayus. So that way she's protected. But you are the one who is going to have to suffer the loss. If it gets taken away, you're the one who has no recourse over here.
That's fine, because that was just what shalei b'achrayus, according to Rav Nachman.
No, in other words, you have to explicitly say Shalai Bachrayus. Now, there are a number of different explanations among the Rishonim, including, for example, I think the Rosh says, not necessarily would he have to do that. Conceivably, he could just argue the Shlichos is bottle, therefore we'll undo the sale, we'll return her money, and she'll go find a more competent Shliach to buy it Bachrayus. Some of the Rishonim say Tachazel. Others of the Rishonim say, no, we don't say that the shlichus is batal. Part of it also, they talk about, it depends whether he presented himself as a shliach or whether he presented himself as an independent buyer.
She didn't tell him.
No, but it's assumed. It's assumed that when you buy a field, it's assumed that you want to buy it back right.
No, but the question is, do you have to say
it? No, you don't have to say. You, when you send a shliach to buy property, the shliach should have the common sense to understand that you're supposed to buy it back right. That's the point. So therefore, if he didn't, then that's what we're saying. That he messed up. So again, so you have some Rishonim who say that conceivably he could just undo the whole thing, return her money, and start all over. Or some of them say, actually, that it may, the Rimi Gash, I think, for example, says, it may depend who is it that said that it should be Shaloi Bachrayus. Was it the seller or was it the Shliach? If it was the shliach who said shaloi b'achrayi, it's true. You make him eat it. But if it was the moicher who said shaloi b'achrayi, it's fine. Then you can just undo the whole sale because she wouldn't have bought the property through the shliach if she knew that the moicher was going to insist on selling it shaloi b'achrayi.
The
shliach should be saying no, but there's a difference. Right. In that case, he should say no, but you can't say you have more reason to argue then that the sale is void than if the shliach himself proposed, you know what? How about I buy it shaloi b'achrayi? Where then you could argue that he was really being careless, and therefore he should have to eat it.
Because she was careless, and I mean, it's such a shliach.
She didn't know.
She
didn't know what kind of shliach was going to turn out to be. Fine,
but that's a problem.
Okay, but
why should the moicher suffer?
Because that's the thing. If we say that the moicher is not going to suffer, either we're going to undo the deal completely.
But
the moicher, fine, then the moicher will find somebody else to sell his caricature. And if he wants to sell it shaloi b'achrayus, then he's going to find a smaller pool of people to sell it to. Okay.
No, I cannot.